Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning because she's taking her boy to college. Rite of passage, which you've done once or twice, Jeannie Ives.
Well, you know, actually, my husband is dropping my daughter off for college this morning, today. They're in Ole Miss right now, dropping them off today.
Another Illinoisan going out of state to college.
They give great deals down there.
I've heard. So is everybody else. That's why they're sending their kids to the SEC schools.
I've got to say, though, Dan, it's 31 years. At 31 years, I've had a kid in the house continuously. So this is a big change.
So what are you and Paul going to do with yourselves?
<I don't know. laughs> Maybe clean up their messes.
All right. Well, Amy's on her way to Atlanta because her oldest, Peyton, is going to Georgia Tech. Your youngest is going to Ole Miss.
Yep.
All right. We'll get to all that. But we begin this morning with Merrick Garland being beaten out of the brush to address the nation, finally, 72 hours after the raid on Mar-a-Lago. And Garland cloaking himself in process and protocol before wagging his finger at the nation. First, the process and protocol, the motion to unseal the warrant that was executed as per the raid on Mar-a-Lago, Garland explained.
Just now, the Justice Department has filed a motion in the Southern District of Florida to unseal a search warrant and property receipt relating to a court-approved search that the FBI conducted earlier this week. That search was of premises located in Florida belonging to the former president. The department did not make any public statements on the day of the search. The former president publicly confirmed the search that evening, as is his right. Copies of both the warrant and the FBI property receipt were provided on the day of the search to the former president's counsel, who was on site during the search. The search warrant was authorized by a federal court upon the required finding of probable cause. The property receipt is a document that federal law requires law enforcement agents to leave with the property owner.
That's nice. There's your DOJ 101. And what drove him to the podium yesterday?
The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter.
It's interesting, the substantial public interest. And you know, we have to follow DOJ rules and not comment on ongoing investigations and so on and so forth. But it was the president confirming the raid had occurred that allows Merrick Garland to provide the very little that he provided yesterday. Really? So, as you said, Mr. Attorney General, the president confirmed the raid on Monday night. So why are we here listening to you on Thursday? What took so long? Were you busy? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
But I was just listening to other commentary that said that the reason that Merrick Garland's going to reveal this is because Judicial Watch sued to have him.
To sue David unsealed. Right.
Yes, and that the judge ordered it to be unsealed. And then Garland goes out and makes his statement.
I don't think that I did. Did the judge rule on the Judicial Watch filing? I didn't see it. I saw the filing earlier this week. So Judicial Watch, like, they filed the next day.
They have to unseal it by Monday at 5 p.m. And then Garland went out and made his statement. after the judge had already ordered it to be unsealed. So now he's sounding like he's going, you know, hey, we're more than willing to tell everybody what was in the warrant. And, oh, by the way, they also sued for the background material that created the warrant.
Right. That's the key. The key is the representations made by the FBI and the Department of Justice by extension on in terms of probable cause, the basis on which the judge granted the warrant. That's what's interesting. But Garland confirmed it was his call. The buck stops with Merrick Garland. Certainly it doesn't stop with the big guy.
First, I personally approved the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. Second, the department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought he took his direction from, you know, the Association of School Boards. I thought that's where he got all his power.
We haven't heard the National Association of School Boards weigh in on this one. He certainly...
He's done their bidding in the past.
That's actually an interesting point because, so whose political bidding is he doing here?
Exactly.
Where's the pressure coming from? The pressure was from the National Association of School Boards, but that's just a representation of the left. Pressure coming from the White House. I mean, again, I talked to somebody, I mentioned this earlier in the week, who is friendly, very friendly with Bill Barr, and he said, that Barr said, so it's, you know, this is like third-party hearsay, but just, you know, somebody that has some expertise in the area. There's no way Biden didn't sign off on this. No way Biden didn't sign off on this. And again, the Newsweek reporting on this, that is just incredible to me, and it sort of rings true given how late to respond Garland was to, and the White House by extension, to the hue and cry that ensued. You really thought this was going to go off as just another law enforcement action, that this was just the normal, ordinary course of business kind of stuff? Nobody would make much a fuss about it. Are you nuts? I still am having a difficult time believing that's what they actually believed. But again, based on Newsweek's reporting in combination with Garland feeling that he finally needed to say something, maybe there's something to it.
Well, there's a school of thought out there, though, that they wanted a reaction from the right, that they wanted a sort another J6 controversy to be stirred up and people to overstep their bounds and everything like that, that they wanted that sort of thing right ahead of the election.
Make Trump front and center.
Yeah, exactly. But also just show how we're going to overreact to them going in with the warrant. And I don't buy that, actually. I think they want to frame him.
Yeah,
I think that they really are after putting him in a trick box so he can't run in 2024. And I don't think it's got anything more to do with than that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes we tend to give them more credit for being creatively diabolical than we actually should. I mean, it's just the continuation of this attempt to capture Trump and put him away and send a message to Trump supporters to never do that again. Now, whether that is through trying to preclude him from running or indicting him for some crimes and believing that would preclude him from running, or it's to actually promote his candidacy, hope he's the nominee, and they believe that gives them the best chance, and that will be the blow 24 that fells him and whatever movement that is attendant to him. There's competing theories, but it all the roads lead back to they want to, and there may be disagreement within their camp. They want to send a message to the nation through Trump: Never will you get so uppity with us again or understand there are consequences. We can take you. We can take anybody you send our way out at any time. And you by extension. So just mind your business.
Well, that's the message they're sending to those state representatives in Pennsylvania. You know, how dare they be in a conversation apparently about alternative electors? And so now you've got justice coming down and looking at their stuff and subpoenaing them. Or Scott Perry, the head of the House
Scott
Freedom
Perry.
Caucus, caucus coming in and just taking his cell phone, his personal cell phone. I mean, this is all
subpoenaed. Interestingly, Scott Perry, Representative Perry, they subpoenaed his cell phone, right? And he relinquished it. Here, they scrambled 35 FBI agents for a very public raid on a former president's residence. And to that point, by the way, as an aside, President Trump's already said he's not going to, you know, in terms of what are Trump lawyers going to, he's not going to oppose the unsealing of the warrant. So we should see at least some of the documentation in short order. Garland also took the occasion of his very brief public statement, no questions, to wag his finger at anyone who would dare question the integrity of the FBI.
Let me address recent unfounded attacks on the professionalism of the FBI and Justice Department agents and prosecutors. I will not stand by silently when their integrity is unfairly attacked. The men and women of the FBI and the Justice Department are dedicated, patriotic public servants. Every day, they protect the American people from violent crime, terrorism, and other threats to their safety while safeguarding our civil rights. They do so at great personal sacrifice and risk to themselves. I am honored to work alongside them.
Aren't you cute? Oh, you're so cute. Now, dare you criticize the FBI? Well, Mr. Attorney General, first of all, you're happy to sit idly by.
Right.
You were very content to sit idly by. And if there wasn't a backlash to the decision that you made in consultation with whoever, perhaps the big guy, then you would have been completely content to sit idly by and watch the FBI get pilloried as you did for the last 3 days. That's number one. Number two, as the Wall Street Journal opined on that, it's a little much to hear him lecture the country that it's beyond the pale to criticize the FBI after the Russian collusion fraud, the Steele dossier con, the misleading Pfizer requests for the Carter Page warrants, and the Robert Mueller whitewash of all that. There are plenty of reasons for Americans to take a don't trust but verify attitude to the Bureau. This isn't disdain for the rule of law. It's well-earned skepticism. And, you know, this is a Wall Street Journal editorial board that is not exactly routinely sympathetic to Trump when it comes to matters like this, per their commentary about his performance on January 6th over the last year and a half, for example. And that doesn't even get to everything from Richard Jewell to Anthrax to Larry Nassar to the Whitmer quote-unquote assassination, kidnapping assassination plot over the last 20 years. Yeah, so right. Just stop with the, yeah, look, everybody respects people in law enforcement who do their job and get the presumption, the benefit of the doubt, the presumption that these are good people that are interested in serving America. Right.
Well, look, but
not,
there
the,
are.
But not the senior leadership.
Not at all. I mean, you've got whistleblowers coming forward to particular congressmen and U.S. senators, which is a good thing. We need more of them. It's like everything. It's like you've got good teachers, but they need to take back their schools. You've got good agents. They need to take back the FBI. I mean, that's true all the time.
Mike in Plano.
Leadership problem.
Hey, guys. I flipped on Fox News after Garland's speech yesterday, and they had Andy McCarthy and Brett Baer on. I know you've had those two on as guests on your show, but let's be real. They're a couple of milquetoast rhinos, and they're also institutionalists. They still want to give these institutions the benefit of the doubt when they no longer should. And one of the talking points they keep using, they actually stole it from the left, is that, Trump could release a warrant. Well, Trump is the accused. I thought the burden of the proof was on the accuser. And I know what McCarthy's saying. He's speaking in legal terms. And, yeah, technically he's right. Trump could release it. But this isn't a legal matter anymore. This is a matter of politics. Stop using that talking point. It's stupid. Why should Trump release the warrant?
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, he's again not going to stand in the way of the motion by DOJ to have the judge unseal it. But that's the beginning of the conversation, of course. But part of this, and we'll get to it, seems to me that it's, you know, we're taking our eye off what maybe is really afoot here with the DOJ and the FBI as it pertains to Trump with all this process conversation.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning, Jeannie Ives, former state rep and congressional candidate, now heading up Breakthrough Ideas, breakthrough-ideas.com. Broadcaster in own right, you do a podcast?
Yeah, we do. Good people on that podcast, absolutely.
All right, you get all the podcasts at breakthrough-ideas.com. Sticking with Merrick Garland's pronouncements yesterday and just the whole fallout from the raid on Monday night. I just want to take a step back and let's just go through the timeline again, you know, because Merrick Garland said yesterday, the desire, of course, is to do these things, obtain the information the DOJ wants by the least intrusive means necessary. And the reporting has been, well, you know, there was this dialogue between Trump's legal team and the National Archives and by extension, the DOJ. And there's this back and forth for the last 6 months or so. But the Justice Department, the National Archives wasn't getting what it wanted. And so there was the need to escalate. You couldn't just issue a subpoena. Okay. June 3rd, senior department, national, this is Wall Street Journal reporters documenting this and sort of establishing the timeline. Timeline's important. June 3rd, Senior Department National Security Supervisor, three FBI agents arrive at Mar-a-Lago to discuss boxes with government records sitting in a basement storage room, along with suits, sweaters, and golf shoes. A few days later, the FBI sent a note asking that a stronger lock be installed on the storage room, signing off, "Thank you. Very truly yours, Jay Bratt, Chief of Counterintelligence and Export Control Section." Okay. As James Freeman in the Journal asked, does this sound like cause for obtaining an unprecedented warrant to search the home of a former president, then descending unannounced with numerous agents? The controversy began when Trump left office. They reached out to National Archives, reached out to his team for what they thought were missing records. The archives in January received 15 boxes of documents and other items from Mar-a-Lago. They contain some documents that archive officials describe only as classified national security information, prompting them to refer the matter to justice for investigation. So that's how you start to get justice involved. They get the boxes. The boxes contain classified national security information. According to them, they send it over to justice. Justice starts looking into it. Aides to Trump said they began cooperating with the department to get the matter settled. That June 3rd meeting, where they came to Mar-a-Lago and took a look at the storage room. That's where Trump even popped in and said, "I appreciate the job you're doing. Anything you need, let us know." 5 days later, Trump attorney Evan Corcoran received an email from Jay Bratt, Chief of Counterintelligence, FBI. We ask that the room at Mar-a-Lago where the documents had been stored be secured and that all boxes that were moved from the White House to Mar-a-Lago be preserved in that room in their current condition until further notice. Quote, Corcoran writes back, Trump's lawyer. Jay, thank you. I write to acknowledge the receipt of this letter with best regards, Evan, his name. By the next day, according to a person familiar with the events, a larger lock was placed on the door per the FBI's request. It was the last communication until Monday's raid. On June 22nd, the Trump Organization, the business, received a subpoena for surveillance footage from cameras at Mar-a-Lago. That footage was turned over, according to an official. So the last communication with Trump's lawyer was June 3rd. 3 weeks later, a little less than 3 weeks later, they got a subpoena for surveillance footage that was from the cameras at the residence. That was apparently turned over. And then the raid happens August 8th. How does that explain that escalation? How does that explain going from zero to nuclear? Very strange. Very strange. And one of the other aspects of this with the reporting yesterday, now that Garland is moving to have the search warrant unsealed. Now, again, the thing that's really important are the representations that were made to the court suggesting that Trump committed a crime, because that's the only way you clear the probable cause threshold to get a warrant to search the home of anybody, much less a former president of the United States. And I'm not suggesting the standard should be any different, but I mean, this isn't political norms is the point. Oh, Trump did something this with classified and so on. This isn't about political norms. You have to make a representation. You believe that the target of the search has committed a crime.
So wait a minute, though. James Comey admits fully that Hillary Clinton has information on her personal server, emails that are of a classified nature. Nothing happens to her.
Mishandling. It was a mishandling.
Yeah, my point is, like, he knows that she's got this because, for various reasons, because it's an email. Maybe you can track it different ways. How do they know that Trump's got classified information, that he took it out illegally, and that he hadn't declassified it? Who is literally packing up the boxes? So my point is, like, who's reporting on this? How do they know what they know? Where do they get it back?
The National Archives apparently made a claim that they had received some documents that were classified, and they referred it to Justice. Now, Justice is making a representation, and again, the reporting is they had a mole in Mar-a-Lago
right. That
apparently knows where these documents are, what the documents are, and where the documents are. Okay, so that, let's just assume that's true. Well, then, how do you not know the nature of the documents in question, like what topic they cover? So there's now reporting about the documents having to do with the United States' nuclear program. I don't know.
I know.
It sounds pretty fishy to me. It sounds, you know, it's because here's the thing. We'll say, well, you know, you'll see, Dan, because we're going to get it. And then if it doesn't check out, well, then some people have egg on their face. We have mountains of stories that never checked out over the last 5 years. Never checked out. We're made up out of a whole cloth. Anonymous sources and this and that. And we thought and we reported and retractions in the dark of a Friday afternoon after weeks of reporting. The D.C. press corps does this all the time. Fill in a blank. And if it turns out to be wrong, so what? We'll just move on to the next angle on the same story. Well, that's what they did for 3 years with Russian collusion.
Also about the timing, which nobody has really spoke to. Maybe you've got some idea about it, but they know that Trump has to sit for a deposition up in New York. So they know that he's not there at the time. So they plan the raid for a time when Trump is not there. There's not a lot of staff around. I mean, I'm just wondering about all of that.
Bill and Glen Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Let me set the scene. You've got Merrick Garland, Christopher Wray,
and Biden Sandler's in a room, and they're saying, okay, how do we cover for the judge? The judge hates Trump, and he wants to sign off on this warrant, but he needs a little cover. So they said, hey, I know. We'll say it's nuclear secrets. Everybody is afraid of that stuff. So when we get down there, we can say that we went in there because of the nuclear secrets. And then by the time people realize that the guy who told us about the nuclear secrets was on our payroll, sent over from Obama and Hillary's camp, the election will be over, but we'll have smeared him, and we'll have fig leaf for going on this raid. You know, it's just insane that people, you know, they're throwing this out, thinking that people are going to think that was the reason. We all know why they did it. It's not a secret anymore. The Department of Justice and the FBI are tools of the Democrat Party now. And the whole nuclear secrets thing is just the fig leaf they're now going to use to shame Republicans and to give Democrats something to smirk about when they're on their cable news shows.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Well, so something on that judge, Bruce Reinhart. It's interesting. I know many people have probably seen the reporting about uncharitable things he said about Trump vis-a-vis John Lewis and donations, political donations he's made. He made some to Republican, I think Bush or something too, but whatever. This is something that's really interesting. This is reporting in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Reinhart, former federal prosecutor, appointed to the bench in 2018. Last March, when Trump sued Hillary Clinton over her claims that he was compromised by Russia, sued her for defamation, Reinhart drew the case. He held on to it for a couple of months before recusing himself without explanation. Actually, Trump's lawyer in the case, the defamation suit against Clinton, characterized Bruce Reinhart. He was actually wonderful. I liked him because he was pretty sharp and seemed to be fair to both sides. Trump lawyer in the defamation case, Peter Tichtin, said he suspects Reinhart had little choice but to sign the search warrant, but the attorney reserved criticism for the FBI who sought the warrant, not the judge who signed it. I think he felt it was the right thing to do, that he needed to do it, even though it was the wrong thing for the FBI to do. Well, maybe, but why would he recuse himself in the Trump-Hillary Clinton defamation case and not recuse himself in a case that essentially pits Trump versus the Biden administration? Isn't that curious? There had to be a reason he recused, he held on to it.
Absolutely.
Thought about it, recused himself, Trump versus Clinton. Trump versus Biden? And a search warrant to raid and to sign off on a search warrant, unprecedented search warrant to raid the home of a former president. So, you know, you're going to go down in the annals of legal history as having signed this warrant, having been party to something that was unprecedented, and you don't recuse yourself. Why? Maybe we need that judge to come forward, too. Or maybe there should be.
Do they have to give a reason for recusal?
They don't. But if I was Trump's attorney in this matter with respect to the DOJ, I would be filing a motion for the judge to recuse himself or talking to him in behind closed doors with DOJ counsel present, of course, not ex parte. And judge, what? You recuse yourself in Trump versus Clinton. It seems to me that you're concerned about having a bias or some appearance of bias. Conflict with respect to the former president. Why did you have it here or there and you don't have it here?
Who cares?
Maybe.
Cares? Does anybody, any of the voters really care? Do they care about the facts or the minutiae?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the initial survey numbers on this suggest that
it's moving voters to want to come out and vote. Even independents, that's what the polls are saying.
Right, and that a majority of independents see this as a political hit, not a wonderful example of the rule of law being enforced. Bob in Grays Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think that Merrick Garland totally blew the raid on Mar-a-Lago. you know, the FBI is talking about transparency and we should believe them and stuff like that. Well, I noticed that every FBI agent that was at the Mar-a-Lago raid was either wearing cargo pants or backpacks. They were fully clothed. So they could have carried anything in there to plant on President Trump. I suggest that if Merrick Garland wants a transparent raid, that next time the FBI, all the agents must be naked. They can only wear a bandolero. with bullets.
Okay, all right.
And their chosen weapon.
Yeah. Okay.
Other than that.
All right. Thanks for the call.
It's not going to be an FBI agent anyway that plants anything. It's going to be somebody. I mean, if that were to happen, somebody else who puts it into the. You know what's sad is we're even discussing the fact that they would plant evidence, but we don't trust them.
Yeah, that's.
I don't trust them.
I don't. There's no reason to believe that anything was planted, but you're right. The fact that the question is being raised by, especially by people who are otherwise inclined to be pretty deferential to law enforcement, says a lot about where the FBI standing is. And frankly, they've earned their reputation at this point. Mm-hmm. Mark, Southside.
Good morning, Dan. I'm going to change the topic that I originally called for, but if this was about nuclear secrets, he's been out of office for 18 months. How incompetent is the FBI if this is the case, that they let this go on for 18 months and did nothing with it?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Mark. And remember, I mean, it's important to keep this in mind in terms of power and the law and political norms. The president, the executive, has the power to classify or not classify, declassify information. And so, you know, that has to be factored into those designations and the designations made by Trump during his term as president. Something else, Kim Strassel has a good piece, as she always does, talking about the payback here. Mm-hmm. The potential payback. So if this does provide a springboard for Trump to run, and I know there's people, DeSantis, and I'm sympathetic to that position, but this is really going to galvanize Trump and Trump supporters, I believe, and Republicans to be Trump supporters, particularly if Merrick Garland and DOJ doesn't produce something incredibly compelling. And so then now what have you done? What have you done to the country in your ends justify the means pursuit of Trump? A second Trump administration wouldn't have the caliber of grown-ups who signed up for the first tour. Mr. Garland's raid has made even the highest political figures fair prosecutorial game, and the media's new standards that the department can't be questioned as it goes about ensuring no one is above the law. Let's see how that holds when a future Republican Justice Department starts raiding the homes of Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Eric Holder, James Comey, and John Brennan. Yeah. I mean, I don't want it to descend to that. I mean, you don't want law enforcement or the lack thereof based on people's political beliefs. But this is the road you're taking the country down when you do the things that we're witnessing.
Well, meanwhile, Daniel Henninger, also in the from the Wall Street Journal, writes that Trump 2 would not be a replay of Trump 1, a more substantive policy-driven presidency than his critics will admit. Trump 2 will be a four-year civil war. The swamp wouldn't drain. It would deepen. The rancor would drown us all. So, I mean...
Right.
And he's got a point.
Yeah. And here's the thing about that. It's always Trump that's the polarizing figure in that conversation about this civil war and this the threat to democracy and so forth. Trump is the polarizing figure because of his Twitter account. But the left is not a mob of polarizing figures because of their authoritarian behavior.
Before you see it on TV. Share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, former state rep and congressional candidate Jeannie Ives. You can find her work and her organization's work at breakthrough-ideas.com. Remember the firestorm that Whole Foods CEO John Mackey created about, 12, 13 years ago when he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal criticizing Obamacare? Whole Foods, where all of these enlightened champagne socialists shop, oh my God, their CEO is opposing something from the man who was sent us from on high to save Western civilization. And I remember reading, it was very thoughtful, and it was, because he's a thoughtful guy, and he took a lot of heat, including ultimately his board coming to him and saying, be quiet. But the point he made in the op-ed, if you want to go back and read it, was the plan that we offer our employees at Whole Foods is better than Obamacare, and we can't keep it. And so how does that help my employees? Simple questions. Mm-hmm. Going back to, lies of yore that you enjoy so much and are still living with, like if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor and so on and so forth.
Makes me want to shop at Whole Foods.
Well, Whole Foods CEO John Mackey is retiring. Mm-hmm. He's, I think he's on about a 30-day out right now. And he's about to get a lot more public, as he indicated in this conversation he had with Reason Magazine's Nick Gillespie. And so that's good news. I think he mentioned he's working on a book right now. So the muzzle is coming off John Mackey, and that's a good thing because he had a lot to say on a lot of topics. They covered over 45 minutes. I definitely encourage people to listen to the Mackey interview by Nick Gillespie, again, at Reason.com. Here's something that he described as what concerns him today, where he sees the country going, and get your reaction to what he had to say.
My concern is that I feel like socialists are taking over. They're marching through the institutions. They're taking everything over. Taking over education. It looks like they've taken over a lot of the corporations. It looks like they've taken over the military, and it's just continuing.
Yeah.
I'm deeply concerned about. I'm a capitalist at heart. And I believe in liberty and capitalism. Those are my twin values. And I feel like, with the way freedom of speech is today, the movement on gun control, a lot of the liberties that I've taken for granted most of my life, I think are under threat.
Yeah.
Back in a court, maybe, back in the Supreme Court, because they they're voting down things.
Yeah. And this is not some, iconoclastic demagogue you're hearing from in John Mackey. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I believe in liberty and capitalism. Those are my twin values. And I feel like with the way freedom of speech is today, the movement on gun control, a lot of the liberties that I've taken for granted most of my life, I think, are under threat.
He said even more, Dan. He said in this article in The Blaze about this interview we had, capitalism is the greatest thing humanity's ever done. We've told a bad narrative, and we've let the enemies of business and the enemies of capitalism put out a narrative about us that's wrong. It's inaccurate, and it's doing tremendous damage to the minds of young people. Wow.
He also, I mean, he tackled awesome. ESG, which is infecting corporate America and undermining capitalism. That's, you know, undermining markets, free minds and free markets. That's essentially what he's saying. Both are being undermined by the left and some on this who consider themselves on the center right, but are cowards or ignoramuses who are complicit with the left's undermining of free minds and free markets. He talked about COVID and the terrible impact that it had on his business and his employees. And he also talked in that interview about a great story. He says he's visiting all of the stores region by region, all the Whole Foods stores, you know, on his farewell tour, talking to employees, many of whom are first-generation Americans, many who have been with the company for a long time, and sharing the success stories, which we don't do enough of on the right, on the pro-entrepreneurial set, share the success stories. He told one story about a woman who's been there for 23 years, first generation, came here with three young kids, and the last one just graduated from college. And now she's got a home, she's got a rental property, an income property, and she put all three kids through college, and she like came up and hugged him and said, "I couldn't have done this without Whole Foods. You know, the Whole Foods made this possible." So on the one hand, you know, you're optimistic about what people can do, what the opportunities still are. But on the other hand, the threats that John Mackey describes are very real. We have, on the, 8 years that I've been here, we have documented those on a weekly, if not daily basis, all of the institutions. And that's the key. That phrase that he mentioned, socialism, Marxism, is taking over, just running roughshod through all of our institutions. And it's not just dollars and cents. It's also a national security threat. His mention of the military genie, mm-hmm. I thought would be particularly of interest to you as a West Pointer.
Absolutely.
Wife of a West Pointer, mom of a of West Pointers.
If the march continues, wokeness in the military. Let's go back to March, too. Remember those cadets who were overdosed on spring break? Well, I know that at least one of them is still walking around campus. So the idea that you're going to allow your standards to slip to the point where you're letting people who took hard drugs, I mean, they bought $1,000 worth of heroin, it happened to be laced with fentanyl, and they're still at the academy? That tells you everything you need to know. I mean, it's just wrong. It's unbelievable.
I think he had to write an essay extolling the virtues of white fragility, and then he was allowed to stay or something like
that. Well, that right? could have been, but, you know, my son who's there, he just keeps his head down, I guess. I guess it's what a lot of people do, but it's still a problem.
You hear a lot of from military. I mean, I remember the one retired.
Not to mention, they're still like, okay, so now you've got the CDC, essentially, we can get rid of the 6-foot distancing, we can get rid of the idiot circles and all that. And you still have people getting out processed from the military for not taking that vaccine.
Right.
That's a problem, too.
Yeah, right. Well, and this retired Marine made the comment a few weeks ago, I mentioned, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, like, when I came into the military, homosexuality was prohibited. Then it became don't ask, don't tell. I'm getting out before it's mandatory.
my son going back again, you know, they did a whole thing at West Point about monkey pox.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A whole
global
PDF
health threat.
Yep. About them. They had to be briefed about it.
And please, people,
so ridiculous.
Updating, just as a quick tangent, WHO guidance on this. Please, monkeypox does not come from monkeys, so stop beating up monkeys, because that's apparently happening in Brazil or some such place.
Did they actually say how you're most likely to get it?
It's prevalent in the community of men who have sex with men, as I understand it from the guidance. But I mean, the military thing, and to that that retired Marine's joke there, the I think it's a joke. The whole idea is you have a lot of probably active duty saying it quietly and retired military saying, if I had to do it over again starting today, I wouldn't do it. And so you have recruitment problems in the military that mirror the recruitment problems you have in police. And does anybody ask people who are otherwise interested in the military why they are, come from generations of families that have generations of people who have served the military? Did anybody ask them? Like we ask the same of family. They'll tell you. They'll tell you why it is. And it is the politicization. It is the march of the Marxists through our institutions that John Mackey is talking
about.
Well,
it's also the lack of meritocracy allowing you to rise to the top, too. But that's not the case
but
anymore.
But that's part and parcel of the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, summer training didn't fire his weapon one time. What? You didn't qualify on your weapon for summer training? Are you kidding me? What is wrong with these people? I don't get it.
Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Jeannie. Thanks for taking my call. You know, in reference to this Whole Foods thing, yesterday I got home and I turned the TV on because I got a thing on my phone about Merrick Garland and his press conference. So I went to Fox and the Five was on and I just caught the tail end of it. And they were slamming the CEO and Whole Foods. It was really weird about what he said. They're like, what is he talking about? And it just seemed like they were, I don't know, it just seemed odd that they were siding with the left on this side and just tearing this guy down. And can I say one real quick
thing? Wait, John, you can, but just can I provide some adult supervision here?
Yeah.
Instead of doing intellectual damage to yourself by watching The Five, why don't you...
In my defense...
Why don't you take that time to pick out, you know, selected interviews and podcasts like a Nick Gillespie interviewing John Mackey so you use your time more wisely.
In my defense, I only turned it on because I didn't want to turn on CNN or any of the other ones because I refused to put that on my cable box.
All right.
But real quick, Merrick Garland, he made the comment about how he supports these officers and how we don't and we should be ashamed.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing, right? None of us, the majority of us, do not hold anything against the agents that work for them. We pray for those guys. A lot of us pray for them first thing in the morning. What we don't like is you, Merrick Garland, the bureaucrats who use them as cannon fodder and then hide behind them and then wag your finger at us because we don't support them. You're the ones that have put them in positions where we need to pray for these people. Your people are the ones who have put them in positions where they're going to get discharged because they won't get vaccinated. We pray for you too, but we pray for those guys. We wave at them. We try to buy them lunch. We try to buy. We support them 100%. So don't. This guy, it makes me sick when these people who put them in harm's way and make their jobs harder, and they're the ones who detest the police officers, the firefighters, and our servicemen, and then they try to point it on the American public and the public. It's just disgusting. Merrick Garland, you're a piece of garbage, and you should never, ever say that kind of thing.
Thanks for the call, Jordan. It's just the old game of projection. That's just what they do. But you're right. Tony, Downers Grove.
Dan, it's Tony Soapbox, of course. The irony that John Mackey from Austin, Texas, which is just slightly liberal, that he could come out and say these things front and center, yet we have politicians that can't do it. So we know what the Democrats are going to run in the midterms and in 2024, pretty much. They'll tout their bills. They'll talk about abortion. Who is front and center talking about what they're going to do? And we could say that about Illinois as well. I mean, I could look at the website about Pritzker's accomplishments, and he could boast those. So where is Darren Bailey? Where is he? Where is he front and center? What is he talking about as far as Pritzker's accomplishments and why they're not really accomplishments? And Jeannie, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What would you have done differently? What would you have done differently in your race that you think might have helped you win the race?
Which Thanks. One? Thanks for the call, Tony.
Governor.
Thanks, Tony.
Oh, look, I mean, that was a 4-month battle royale, and we had no money until the very end. So, I mean, honestly, $500,000 more, we would have won that race easily.
Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Wow, I think $500,000. You could have won, Jeannie. That would have been
$500,000 or one more week.
Or one more week.
One more week.
Sorry. Because people were tuning in and it was, yeah, but anyway.
Jeez, that was just sad and disappointing. But try again. That's what I say. How insightful from the CEO of Whole Foods. And you mentioned it was healthcare, Dan, was the subject of the op-ed.
Yeah, from 12, yep. 13 years ago, Obamacare, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so regarding Obamacare, you know, I lost my job at the beginning of the pandemic in a bank. I went back in my field, you know, tried to do that, and not only was I was in Cobra Health for 18 months and then had to buy a policy off the Affordable Care Act. The difference in price was $1,600 for my family, and the Affordable Care Act was $2,200 for the same policy. So that's wonderful. I had to do that. And I've said before that as the institutions deteriorate in this country, I believe it'll be the demise of the country if, you know, it doesn't go back the other way. How in the world can they just, you know, destroy our military, you know, destroy our branches of government, destroy the Democrats, in my opinion, are just destroying everything. And you're telling me people don't notice? So what I'll do now is go out today and point out to people and see what they have to say about how they're living and point out the details like we talk about all the time and say, how are things going for you? I mean, are you happy with all of this? And yet, why do you keep pulling a Democratic primary ballot?
Well,
why
good.
Do we do it?
Good. Thanks for the call, Mary Kay.
A couple things on this real quick. Okay, first of all, I found as a state legislator, and I find just watching it still and being involved, that the politicians don't care what the business community says, at least not in Illinois. They literally don't care. And I mean, this is a little bit off topic.
Well sure.
But they don't. I mean, all these people say
Ken Griffin
say
leaves
stuff.
And they shrug their shoulders.
Caterpillar
Big
leaves,
deal.
Boeing leaves.
Big deal. Businesses but come
even,
and go, right.
No, but even the manufacturers, they fought this CEJA bill, this Climate and Energy Jobs Act. It's a total farce. Everything about it a farce. They warned them exactly what was going to happen if they passed CEJA. The ICC warns them. They don't care. Safety Act. They don't care. You name it. Any other topic, these legislators don't care. And then they lie to the voters, and the voters refuse to pay attention.
And that's why they don't. That's why the politicians don't care, because there's no cost imposed.
There's no cost. Yeah. None.
Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's not the previous caller said, where's Bailey? Well, my reply to him and everybody else who listens and nods when their cars and said, yeah, Dan's right and all that type of stuff, call a campaign, see how you can volunteer. We're always waiting for the great person to come along and save Illinois. The people who are listening and who are upset are the ones who are going to save Illinois. Yeah, you can't wait for somebody else to do it. You've got to go and take some action. And it's easy. You can call Bailey, or you can call Pantu or some of the other congressional ones that are running and volunteer and see what you can do. Or just contact a precinct captain or a precinct committeeman if there is one. If there isn't, become it.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. David in Lansing.
Good morning, Dan and Jeannie. Republican voters are pretty good at pointing out socialism, how it's prevalent everywhere and growing, but pretty bad at fighting socialism. Mm. Socialism is like nitrogen. It's everywhere. Here's how to fight socialism. You cut off the source. You defund and sell stock in the parent companies of the woke companies hosting socialism. Don't like Mark Zuckerberg putting $400 million into Dropboxes everywhere? Stop using Facebook and sell Facebook stock. Don't like fake news? Stop watching Warner Brothers Discovery, CNN, and MSNBC. Sell stock in Discovery and Comcast. Defund the socialism. That's how you do it.
Thanks,
David.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is former state legislator, congressional candidate Jean Yves. She now heads up Breakthrough Ideas, breakthrough-ideas.com. And we were just talking about what Whole Foods CEO John Mackey had to say about socialism, and to use his word, and his concern about the left running roughshod over all of our institutions and destroying them from within, essentially. Well, schools was one he mentioned, of course, one we spend a lot of time talking about for all sorts of obvious reasons. The Fargo Public School Board is worthy of a Coen Brothers movie. The Fargo Public School Board in North Dakota voted this week to stop reciting the Pledge of Allegiance at school board meetings. Why? Well, let me turn the microphone over to Vice President of the Fargo School Board, Seth Holden, to explain why, because he's put a lot of thought into this.
The board reciting the pledge runs counter to our district's philosophy. Given that the word God in the text of the Pledge of Allegiance is capitalized, and Jim had brought this up in the in our previous discussion of this, the text is clearly referring to the Judeo-Christian God, and therefore it does not include any other faiths, such as Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, all of which are practiced throughout the country and among our staff and students at FPS. It also includes agnostics and atheists, and I think the exclusion of these faiths or lack thereof within the pledge automatically makes the Pledge of Allegiance a non-inclusionary act in itself. So for the board to begin each meeting by engaging in a non-inclusionary act runs counter to our philosophy.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Under God, that connotes the Judeo-Christian God and thus violates the sanctified die statement of the Fargo Public School District Board. As because that would be a non-exclusionary act if the premise of what Mr. Holden had to say is correct.
Well, the problem here is that this has already been litigated. You can have a prayer before a city council meeting. We open up with a prayer ahead of all of our legislative floor proceedings in the state house. And in fact, the term God is actually universal among a lot of different religions.
It's
universal.
It is ecumenical. Yeah.
You're not saying Jesus Christ.
No, you're not. If you don't like that reason, he's got another one. So let's listen to the full argument he offers so that we can respond as fully.
The board reciting the pledge, I would say, violates board policy. There's text within the Pledge of Allegiance that is just, it's simply not true. Almost all, if not all of our religions on earth are practiced here in the United States. And the statement that we are one nation under God is the Judeo-Christian God, as the pledge clearly states by capitalizing the word God, is simply an untrue statement. We are one nation under many or no gods. It is also an indisputable fact, and it's a fact that I hope we all can agree on, that not all U.S. citizens have liberty and justice, which is stated in the pledge, therefore making the line one nation with liberty and justice for all an untrue statement.
He is a truth teller. He's a fact checker. He fact checked the pledge and he found it wanting.
He didn't fact check John Adams. Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other.
Here's something interesting about the Fargo Public School Board that voted to stop reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Holden made this clear at the outset of his remarks. This policy change applies only to the school board. It does not apply to the school. doesn't apply to the kids. Well, golly, Mr. Holden, if this is a egregious non-exclusionary act or cite the pledge full of lies like liberty and justice for all, then why would you tolerate the children reciting the pledge? Or why wouldn't you at least not, you know, because you
well, maybe you don't can want just to be the like the Glenn Broad South. Remember that? The principal is at the graduation ceremony. She just simply leaves under God out.
Right. You could right? selectively
edit. She's not
edit.
The only one. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can come up with his own pledge.
Right. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, blah, 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 one nation under many different gods. Or no gods. Yeah. Just you could do that. But you know, you say, well, he's afraid of litigation. He doesn't want to engender litigation because, of course, we're worried about litigation. On advice of counsel is the under investigation, so I can't comment. What the FBI and law enforcement uses to never have to be accountable for what they're doing, it's under investigation. I can't comment. That's what school boards use. That their version of it is on advice of counsel. So you say, well, on advice of counsel, he's not going to do that because he doesn't want engender litigation. Well, he could make a recommendation. He could say, you know, it's a voluntary thing. Of course, you don't have to recite the pledge. For those who choose to, I would encourage you not to, because the adults here on the school board, your duly elected representatives, the voices of the people, have determined that it violates Fargo Public School Board policy. And Fargo School Board public policy, Fargo Public School Board policy, and the Pledge of Allegiance, you got to pick one. Because as Seth Holden said, Mr. Holden, they're mutually exclusive. And for the die crowd, the die cultists, when they're mutually exclusive, then you pick the die statement. So maybe the school board could just recite the die statement before every school board meeting.
Well, you know, I guess they're not. The folks in North Dakota aren't quite as informed as the folks in Wyoming, and you know, this just in: Wyoming's the first state to terminate its relationship with Panoramic Education. That's that education system that was co-founded by Merrick Garland's son-in-law, the one that teaches CRT and everything. Well, Wyoming just said we're completely terminating our relationship with you. So there's something in the water in Wyoming that's not in the water in North Dakota.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's the case. But I, you know, when we were talking before Mike Scott's newscast about what John Mackey said, and we had a caller talk about good at identifying the Marxist march to their institutions, not so good at stopping it, not so good at combating it. This is an example of what he was talking about. I agree. And, you know, and again, if this is happening in Fargo, North Dakota, you can bet it's happening in a lot of school districts around the country that perhaps have not been uncovered at this point. Nobody has blown the whistle on what's happening the way that somebody clearly did with respect to Fargo, which is how we know about it down here in Chicago and are talking about it. But it's a great example of the phony high-mindedness of these school board folks, and it's a good example also of why I'm looking forward to getting involved in school board races around the country to have a conversation within the community or help to drive one about school board members like Seth Holden. Is that? I mean, understand the test here. It's you. If anything runs afoul of the school board die statement, that anything must be removed. That is preeminent. That is the statement of principles. That is the founding document now in the 21st century with the new Marxists in control, your die statement. And it's not just schools, of course, it's corporations and nonprofits and artistic institutions and all of those civic institutions. That's that John Mackey was talking about.
Sick.
Pledge runs into the die statement. Die statement trumps. Constitution Anything else? Anything else that is determined to be false, according to these die cultists like Seth Holden? Out.
Well, at least one school board member, Robin Nelson, voted against the proposal, called it a distraction. Well, it's far more than that.
6-2 vote.
Mm-hmm.
The motion to include the pledge was approved in March on a 6-2 vote. There's only two members, this guy you heard from and one other that voted against it. But they're pushing, and they're happy to start with one or two, and before you know it, they're the majority. How often have we seen that play out in Chicagoland? Andy on 88, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's pretty simple to me. It's, again, dictatorship. All right, that's swell. It's really simple. Why don't we just say, hey, can we discuss this? Let's drop the capital G that you're so freaked out about. Make it a small g. Use your intelligence, because we know you have it, and use the word God to be inclusive. It sounds great to me. Why wouldn't that sound great to them?
Thanks for the call. We still have to deal with and liberty and justice for all, because right now, according to Seth Holden, not everybody has liberty and justice. This is like a classic. This is a sort of idiotic thinking you get like at a top 20 university. This sort of deconstructionism that infected every academic department. Liberty and justice for all, which is, of course, a statement of principle, not a description of every incident happening in real time. Nitwit. And this is a guy you want having influence over your children's curriculum?
Look, he can go to North Korea where there is no God. Go to China where there is no God. Just get the hell out, because you should not be in charge of children's educations in the United States. I mean, that's where I am. These people, well, I hope Dan, I mean, maybe he's one of your top targets for the spring election.
He's moving up the list the more I hear from him.
Yeah.
But to Andy's point, no, you don't lowercase g and God. You don't give an inch to this anti-intellectual fraud that these cultural Marxists are attempting to perpetrate. You call out the fraud when you see it and you dig in. We're not going to be party to a fraud. I'm not going to lie to my constituents, children in the school. I'm not going to participate in that. Roger, Orland Park.
Hi, I just want to say that God created heavens and the earth, and have mercy on these people who don't agree with that.
Thanks for the call, Roger. John, Naperville.
Hey, no, I think this Holden guy is absolutely 100% correct. There is not liberty and justice equally in this country. Just ask Donald Trump and all the others that are persecuted by the Democratic Department of Justice and FBI.
All right, John, thanks.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and in for Amy this morning is former state legislator Jeannie Ives, now at breakthrough-ideas.com.
We just redid our website. We redid our website, and now we're putting up the 12 worst votes during the Pritzker administration, and you can follow it. That'll be up soon, and you can see if your legislator voted for this garbage.
Very helpful in advance of the November 8th election. Today in the House at the federal level, you have House members taking up the IRS Expansion and Growth Reduction Act, otherwise known as the Inflation Reduction Act. Good observation from John Cochran over at his blog, The Grumpy Economist. He's a good one. Why doesn't the government have to produce numbers on the alleged impact of all these green subsidies contained in the $700 billion of funny money spend. He writes, the SEC wants to mandate every company calculate and disclose carbon emissions. So it surely does think this is not an insuperable task. If you have to do a full five-year NEPA environmental assessment to build a road or conduct a controlled burn, why do you not have to do the most minimal calculation to save the planet? It's astounding we're asked to spend gargantuan amounts of money and severely reduce economic prosperity along the way, especially in poor countries, to address the climate during our great-great-great-grandchildren's lives. Yet proposed legislation and regulations do not calculate and advertise what the actual benefits of policies are in a public, quantifiable, and transparent way. You know, $250 billion. Nice round number. Of course it's a round number. And what do we get for that? We get to save the planet. That's all you need to know. You're not against saving the planet for your children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren, and so forth, are you? Come now. Never having to prove your work. Because we're saving the planet. How can you bother me with these tedious details of how exactly that $250 billion worth of spend will produce the outcome that we're suggesting and what come on. Save the planet, people. Polar bears. The Arctic's melting. We must do something.
Even when they do something, Dan, and they set out standards, they never meet them. Since 2007, Illinois had a renewable portfolio standard. Like, we wanted renewables to take up 20% of our energy mix by 2020. Then it was 25% by 2025. Now it's 40% renewable will provide for all the electricity in the state of Illinois by 2030. Well, where are we at right now? Less than 10%.
Yeah.
Barely 9%.
Well, I have a response.
It's a joke.
Response to that. The response, of course, is I take your point. We've done some good work, but there's more work to do. If that's what you're saying, there's more work to do, then of course there's more work to do. And this is why we need to make it bigger, faster. And that's always what you get. There's never a problem with a failure to meet whatever lofty generic goals are set, because it's always we've made progress, but there's more to do. Make it bigger, spend more, and concede more of your liberty in the process. For more on this, pleased to be joined by Mary Miller, congressman from Illinois' 15th district, and she'll be one of those members of Congress voting today. Mary, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Well, I guess we continue the Emperor's New Clothes procession. The Inflation Reduction Act should be called the Inflation Skyrocketing Act.
Yeah, and so obviously, being in the minority, you need some Democrats to defect. Any prospect of that occurring?
Not from what I've heard, but it's
yeah.
Really a shame. This is a disaster for Americans. $700 billion in tax increases and $400 billion to cut our energy independence. And I do have to say, recently I had a conversation with my 20-year-old son, and I asked him what has given us the standard of living we have. And he looked at me and I said, you know, we're living in the lap of luxury of all time in all history. And I said, why? And he thought about it a little bit, and he said, work, which, you know, that's a good answer. But I said, no, I said, it's energy. And I said, you could take oxen and plow to that field and barely eke out an existence. I said, it's because of energy that you're able to take your four-wheel drive tractor out there and overproduce and give us the standard of living we have. And shutting our energy independence down is going to bring us to our knees.
The other aspect of this, you mentioned the tax increases too, and this is one of the curious things, another one of the curious things about it. At the same time, we say that part of the issue is too many dollars in with respect to inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods, and so we need more supply, more production to generate more supply of goods, services, and yet this legislation would tax investment, which you'll get less of. So then you'll be able to, businesses will produce less and you'll still have too many dollars chasing too few goods.
Exactly. It's a huge increase in the size of government. Again, the Democrats' agenda is to increase taxes and spending.
And tax collectors.
Exactly. 87,000 more agents. They're coming after the people that already pay taxes, the middle class. I mean, audits already disproportionately target the middle class.
Well, Mary, I mean,
there's more tyranny coming.
Yeah, well, you know, we live under tyranny in the state of Illinois. You know that. I was at the energy town hall that five state reps, including your husband, put on yesterday. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be more clear that this just fuels this federal government, which is going to now put in additional supports for green energy, is going to make things even worse in the state of Illinois because Illinois is all in. For green energy, it's a total disaster. Chris Miller, your husband, spoken up eloquently about this. And, you know, the truth is though, when the federal government gets involved to this level, you no longer have your little laboratories of democracy, of policy differences. And so where you can, you know, judge all of this between other states. And what came out last night was alarming. I mean, Illinois is shutting down all of its hydrocarbon sourced energy. That's their plan. Mm-hmm. And yet they're going to buy coal and natural gas energy produced in other states and then ship it back across the transmissions lines. I mean, this is the epitome of stupid. And I don't know how to wake people up about it.
Well, I think what they did last night, having town halls, we need to talk to our neighbors and our children and let them know what's going on. But I think this is not just in Illinois. I think this is a global effort. I think besides the fact that President Trump exposed the incompetence of the left and the deep state, I think that he allowed us to gain energy independence, made the globalists and the left hate him. And this is a global effort it's basically about power and control, redistribution of wealth. The Paris Climate Accord, that is ridiculous. He got us out of that. Biden right away gets us back into it. It's redistribution of wealth. And the fact that they give India and China a pass by calling them developing nations, and they can do whatever they want, which tips the scales in their favor for manufacturing and everything else. It's ridiculous.
Speaking of President Trump, what's the temperature on the Hill right now after the raid on Monday night and then Merrick Garland finally being beaten out of the brush to address the nation as he did yesterday?
Well, I just got here because we're going to vote in about an hour. But this is what happened is egregious. It's unprecedented. I don't know what the temperature is here. I belong to the Freedom Caucus. We've made a statement condemning this. Every American should be alarmed and outraged at what's happening here. You know, they have yet to justify or explain why they did this. I mean, I think that they're on a quest in search of a crime. And it's just continuing. This has gone on for, what, 6-7 years now.
And, you know, part of the energy right now in terms of enthusiasm for Republicans to turn out in November and even a lot of independents that are engaged for November. Part of that is a promise that Republicans, if they were given the reins of power in the House and the Senate, they would do something about these real and perceived abuses. And so how do you respond to that? Why should people have faith that the Republican Party, if they were in charge of the House and the Senate, would start to bring the accountability that's been lacking the last 2 years?
Well, I can tell you that Republicans are united against what Biden has done. And, you know, there are people that are outraged over this. I know the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, the day after the raid on President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, they found him and his wife and children on vacation, and they took his personal phone. This is unprecedented. Even in Mar-a-Lago, for them to not show the search warrant, to order them to turn off their security cameras, and President Trump has been cooperating with them. The lock they broke in the basement to get to these records was put on at their request. They've been doing everything they wanted.
Right. And so so what about the future of the FBI? What should it be? I mean, is there a conversation that's going to happen among Republicans about serious reforms tied to continued funding, or even a more existential conversation about the FBI's existence at all?
Well, there's been a lot of conversations in the House Freedom Caucus meetings about the FBI for over a year. The FBI, I think, has proven they're capable of anything. And if the FBI doesn't raid the homes of the Biden family members who took payments from Chinese communist officials, Moscow officials, and Ukrainian officials while holding 10% for the big guy, we have conclusive proof that we have two systems of justice in our country, and the FBI should be shut down. I'm sorry. We're going to have to start over there.
All right. There it is. Mary Miller, she is a congresswoman from Illinois' 15th. Representative Mary Miller, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Take care.
And she joined
Connect
us
with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and former state legislator Jeannie Ives in for Amy this morning. We were just talking Mary Miller. You heard what Congressman Miller said. Look, if we don't see an equal application of the law and the investigative power of the FBI, then the FBI should be shut down and we need to be reimagine it. That's a big statement, even though that's absolutely a conversation that's going on in the nation right now, as we talked about at some length over the last several days. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Scott Perry, congressman from Pennsylvania, Freedom Caucus, and she made reference to it, as you did earlier in the show, Jeannie, Mary Miller did, that they subpoenaed his phone and took possession of his personal cell phone. This is where some legal analysts actually believe the FBI is looking. This is the direction in which they're actually looking. All of this talk of process and nuclear the documents related to the country's nuclear program and the Presidential Records Act is a misdirection. The focus is and always was January 6th. Here's Andy McCarthy earlier this week on it. And that specific instance, the timing of the raid and the seizure of Representative Scott Perry's cell phone.
What happened at Mar-a-Lago is not in isolation. It's part of a pattern that goes on for about 6 weeks that begins with search warrants on a couple of Trump-related lawyers who were involved in January 6th and continues, Sandra, even the day after the Mar-a-Lago search warrant, with this search warrant that was extraordinary that was executed on Congressman Scott Perry for his cell phone. He's one of the Trump allies in the House who was very much involved in the Stop the Steal campaign that surrounds January 6th. So I don't think these things can be separated. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that the search that they did at Mar-a-Lago, when I say it's pretextual in the sense that they want evidence for more than one matter, I'm not saying that they were fraudulent in any way in getting the search warrant. What I'm saying is I think they're more interested in January 6th than they were interested in what they were, what the reason for the warrant was, which was the classified information and the government records.
I think that's generous to say it's pretextual if he turns out to be right. It is a misrepresentation of the court, because you can say we classified information and we believe that he committed a crime under the Presidential Records Act, which is never used, almost never used, criminally, even though it's a statute, and it's never obviously been used against the president. And if you just were using that as the basis to get January 6th related material to continue your criminal investigation into President Trump associated with what happened on January 6th, And then, as he said, then you get the subpoena for Scott Perry's phone the next day. Then that is not acting in good faith before that court and before that judge. That's a problem in my mind. So we'll see.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is former state legislator and congressional candidate Jeannie Ives, who now heads up Breakthrough Ideas, breakthrough-ideas.com, to get to get her content, podcasts, and other things, also to get involved.
We're also going to be doing we're doing a series of town halls too. They'll be at the Abington Banquets in Glen Ellen. The first one is September 13th. It's culture and education. We got Terry Schilling coming in, Ted Dabrowski coming in as well, and Frank McCormick. Talking about education scores, the real test scores, and also the culture around it. We've got another one coming October 15th. That's all about crime. We've got two confirmed panelists and more coming on.
All right, great. So town halls coming is the salient issues in advance of the November 8th election. All good stuff. Breakthrough-ideas.com to sign up for those events. Get involved. Today, as we were talking about with Congresswoman Miller just a few minutes ago, you'll have the House take up the IRS Expansion and Growth Reduction Act that the Biden administration moved through this and Senate Democrats. Pagliacci moved through the Senate earlier this week.
Which nobody believes is actually going to reduce inflation, by the way.
Well, certainly the CBO doesn't. The Joint Committee on Taxation doesn't seem to. And as we were talking about, too, I mean, it's also just sort of fun with Democrat socialist platitudes about saving the planet when it comes to any sort of assessment on the impact of, say, $250 billion in green subsidies. Another aspect of this, and this was touted by Pagliacci upon passage 5150 with Kamala casting the tie-breaking vote earlier this week, Medicare. Medicare will finally be allowed to negotiate drug prices. This is a major victory for the American people. Major victory for the American people on drug prices. This is what they've been suggesting they were doing with double-digit inflation. It's not as bad as you think because we're going to bring your prescription drug costs down, seniors. That was their messaging to seniors. Is that true? And at what cost, if it is true? I don't think it's true. Price controls don't normally work. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Jack Calavritinos, easy for me to say, CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine Executive Director. Jack, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Good pronunciation, by the way, on a really tough name.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I hope I didn't offend your people. So tell us about this. Chuckie Schumer saying Medicare will finally be allowed to negotiate drug prices. Major victory for the American people, is it?
It is not a major victory. It is as false as the name inflation reduction is false for the entire thing, the entire bill. It does the opposite. I mean, actually, what's interesting is that in the last year, prescription drugs, even though a lot of blockbuster drugs do have high price tags, they've only gone up 2%. And within the sort of ecosystem of healthcare costs generally, they do not lead the way. But they're taking some actions that they've always wanted to take. And this word negotiation, you know, as Americans, we kind of, you know, like that word. We want to negotiate. We want to get the best deal. We go get a car. We want to, you know, haggle. But this is not that. This is saying to innovators and manufacturers, you will take our low price. And if you don't agree, we're actually going to impose a 95% excise tax on you.
Yeah, negotiation at the point of a gun, right?
Yes, exactly, at a point of a gun. And look, so many parts of the world have already gone down the path of price controls, which is what this really is. And, you know, President Trump used to talk about, you know, it's the rest of the world would get the advantage, you know, of some of our higher prices. But what the Democrats, you know, are doing is to sort of want to make us like the rest of the world. And in Europe, cancer patients who are seniors only get 60% of the available drugs, whereas opposed in this country, they get 95% of the drugs that are out there available to them.
And yes, so, you know, I don't want to flack for big pharma. I mean, particularly during the COVID era,
right.
My excitement about some of these big drug companies was diminished considerably. However, they're still, despite their COVID politics, they are still doing a lot of important research into life-saving drugs, development of life-saving drugs. I don't know what the number is these days, but I remember it recently, relatively recently, being something like $2 billion of R&D to try to bring a drug to market. So these are massive investments. Yeah. And so, you know, so from without, you know, being a corporate flack for big pharma, just thinking about what the good work that's done there and the life-saving drugs that have been developed and are under development, you know, what do you think the net impact of this legislation will be? Will it be, you know, modestly negative, or will it be something that really considerably inhibits the development of new, exciting, life-saving drugs?
Yeah, well, the first impact, which is what they claim, is not going to be occurring. And even if it were to, it's going to be actually after the 2024 election in terms of downward, you know, downward pressure on prices of some drugs. So the inflation part of it isn't immediate, has nothing to do with our current inflationary situation, and doesn't come until after 2024 anyway. But the really negative impact is there are a lot of drugs in the pipeline. And you're right, it takes over $1 billion, sometimes $2 billion. I mean, it's outrageous to think about that number. To develop a drug, and some companies may opt to pull their efforts because Medicare is the largest payer of healthcare in the world. And so this is a huge mega market that they're being, you know, told we're going to have price controls. Insurers actually take their cues from Medicare in a lot of different ways.
It sort of reminds me a little bit of, you know, the message to the oil companies. You need to refine and invest in refining more oil faster to deal with gas prices. Wait a second. You want my industry to go away. So why would I do that? And it's sort of the same thing here. You want me to invest, you make $2 billion investment to bring a drug to market, but then you're going to hammer me if I don't take the prices you want to impose that in some cases could be, you know, below cost.
It's a bullying effort. It's a diminishing and it's a demonizing of the private sector in both fronts. And what really kills me about your energy example is it's one thing to go after big oil, which they shouldn't be doing. But, you know, that's an easy whipping boy for them, I guess. But they actually were going after also, as you know, convenience store owners, the gas stations themselves, which are not owned by big oil. Those are mom and pop small businesses that sell candy, sell stuff, have auto repair, and, oh, by the way, also sell gas. And this administration, this president and this press secretary was making it sound like they were gouging the American people. So, I mean, shame on them for not standing up for American businesses.
Hey, I also thought that we had kind of solved this already. Like, here we are going to change the rules midstream. We already have laws, patent laws, that protect people's intellectual property when it comes to drugs and drugs development. And they play by those rules. They have to play by those rules. And then they apparently, after a certain amount of time, I think it's 20 years, they go to a generic brand or whatever. So there's always already rules in place for these folks to recoup their costs, and now we're just going to penalize them further. And then on top of that, I thought Medicare Part D was supposed to solve some of these problems as well. And it just, again, we're just screwing around with the system when we actually need more players in it, just like we need more players in the energy sector to drive down prices, and they're just preventing it.
I'm so glad you just brought that up, both of those points, because just to add to each one of those, when it comes to you know, going off patent, you are right. And so 80% of what your listeners' take right now in terms of prescription drugs are generic. And, you know, and pharma companies aren't complaining about that. They know what the rules are. In fact, some of them actually own generic companies. But, you know, they're not complaining. That's just the way it is. You try to recoup your investments, make your profit, and then the drugs go to generics. And then on your second point, you are right. You know, Part D, President Bush's, right, you know, landmark, you know, healthcare initiative, one that, you know, there are conservatives that weren't exactly happy with the expansion of Medicare in that way. But here's the good news about it, is that there is competition within Part D, and insurance companies compete with each other in order to encourage seniors to go with their particular Part D plan. So in a way, it's a government program that incorporates competition and negotiation. So it's another lie from the Democrats when they say they're going to initiate a negotiation for the first time. It already exists with Part D.
Although it is both with Part D, it's like with Obamacare. Wait, Part D was going to make prescription drugs affordable, and so that mm-hmm. would be the end of it. And so, but it's never the end. It just needs to get bigger. Obamacare is going to make health insurance affordable, but all we talk about is making health insurance more affordable 15 years later. Almost. Speaking of Obamacare, you know, if Republicans take control of the chambers and you get a Republican president in 24, is that still on the table? Let me just give you an example, real world example. We were just talking about this earlier in the show because of the comments that John Mackey, the Whole Foods CEO, is making about socialism on his way out the door. This is from a dentist friend of mine. In 2010, when Obamacare was passed, our medical insurance was $546 a month and with a $2,500 deductible. Now our medical insurance is $2,000 a month with a $14,000 900 deductible. Obamacare didn't end up saving me very much. Quite the opposite, obviously, exponential price increases. And that's not an isolated story, as you know. So the question is, we had a chance and John McCain blew that chance for us. Is there something that Republicans are intent on revisiting, really rolling back this backdoor takeover of healthcare in this country and moving towards more market-oriented reforms that they've talked about for so many decades now?
Oh, wow. Big question, and I think I'm going to make your listeners a little bit disappointed with my answer.
Well, that's okay. Because, you can take it.
You know, having served myself in the Trump administration at HHS under Secretary Azar and the FDA, you know, it was the first and the biggest legislative healthcare initiative that the Trump administration took, and you know, failed. And John McCain, as you said, with the thumbs down. It is so hard with every passing year to pull that up by the roots and kill it. But what we did do, which the Biden administration is trying to change, and actually one of your Chicago natives, Demetrius Katsoukas, another Greek name, he was head of Medicare at HHS to create solutions to look at, well, what about short-term, less expensive plans, things that the Democrats don't like because they want everyone in more expensive, Obamacare plans. How about upcoming expansion, you know, deadlines? Trump administration was against those. There's an expansion in this bill. So you get a Republican back, there are ways to put limits on it. But to pull it up by the roots and to kill it is going to be awfully hard.
Well, I mean, that's an honest answer. I think that's a real honest assessment, which is, yeah, it's incumbent upon people to put pressure on them to do the things that they've campaigned on for so many cycles. He is Jack Calavritinos, CPAC Coalition Director. Executive Director, CPAC Coalition Against Socialized Medicine is the organization. Jack, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. And congratulations on the Cubs winning the Field of Dreams game.
Yes. So such an accomplishment for Chicago. They're few and far between. He joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Sports and politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and
intersection.
Arrogance and ignorance, arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance.
Intersection.
Dan and in for Amy this morning is former state legislator Jeannie Ives. And big news in the sports world this week. Tennis great Serena Williams announced that she's going to be retiring, and she was, I guess, going to just walk away, and then she talked to Tiger Woods, she said, and he convinced her to make one more go at the U.S. Open, I think. But anyway, Vogue had a write-up on her retirement.
Vogue of all places.
Yeah. Paper of record, news outlet of record, a magazine of record when it comes to cultural Marxism. She said, Serena, about her retirement, "Believe me, I never wanted to have to choose between tennis and a family. I don't think it's fair. If I were a guy, I wouldn't be writing this because I'd be out there playing and winning while my wife was doing the physical labor of expanding our family. Maybe I'd be more of a Tom Brady if I had that opportunity."
Okay. What's wrong with that statement?
Nothing. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I embrace every aspect of it.
If she were a guy, maybe she wouldn't be Serena Williams and making a, you know, a quarter of $1 billion playing tennis in the women's league.
Well, also, I mean, who says she can't have a wife? If my wife would be expanding the family. Well, hey, that was, you know, your choice.
That's right.
You chose to be a traditional fuddy-duddy and marry a man. That's not on me. That's not on society. That's your problem.
Wow, you really twisted that.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out I've got a proposal too, but I'll hold that.
All right.
Maybe I'd be more of a Tom Brady if I had the opportunity, because she's
right.
She's going to be 41 this month. She does have a daughter,
Olympia,
but she wants to have more kids. Obviously, this is the problem. And when Tom Brady wants to have more kids, he just tells Giselle to go purchase some somewhere. I don't know what he does. But she goes, now, wait a second. She's not wishing that she was a man. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I love being a woman, and I loved every second of being pregnant with Olympia. It's her daughter. I was one of those annoying women who adore being pregnant, was working until the day I had to report to the hospital. But I'm turning 41 this month, and something's got to give before her body gives out, that is.
Yeah, but I can't understand her conundrum here, because, one, if she wants to expand her family, she can adopt and not take the physical issue. But I don't think, reading her entire report here, her memorandum to herself about why she's going to have to quit tennis to be a mom, I mean, it seems to me like she's more concerned about actually taking care of the children herself. Which I think is admirable.
Yeah, sure.
I think that's more of it than the physical.
Well, also, she's 40. She's not the best player in the world anymore, you know. And I mean, she's still a great player. I'm not taking anything away from her. But I mean, 40 in tennis—that's it is like sort of Tom Brady at 66 or however old he is playing football. I mean, that's a long time to play tennis, because it's just, you know, you take such a pounding on your joints and whatnot.
Why can people like her not be happy?
I don't
understand it.
I don't even think, you know, this is just my psychoanalysis from afar, but I don't even think that it's not that she's not happy. I think there's this cultural imperative, particularly in leftist celebrity circles, to say certain things. And so rather than this being a celebration of her retirement and, you know, I've had this storied career, this Hall of Fame career, regarded as one of the best women tennis players who's ever played the game.
Ever.
But I got a family. I've got a daughter. I'm going to be 41. I'm bumping up against my limits here. And so I want to have another kid or something. That'd be great. But you feel like I have to. If I was a man, I wouldn't have this problem. If I was a man, I could be Roger Federer. But since I'm a woman and I'm a second-class citizen in this oppressive patriarchy, I got to retire to pop out this kid. I feel like they're compelled to say that.
It's so narcissistic.
They have to say it. They have to.
So no other person ever has to make a decision about family life versus a job.
No, because women can have it all. You can have it all at the same time.
No, you can't.
Right. I know, but that's not what we're told, and then what is told by
the good part of this article,
cultural elites,
though,
then just gets repeated.
The good part of this article, though, she spends a lot of time discussing how happy it makes her to be a mom. I love that part.
I don't dislike Serena. I think she's sort of she's just sort of captive to the culture.
Yeah.
And I think this is an illustration of it. It's sort of like she had this other moment.
She could have, she could have actually been a real champion for motherhood had she written this differently.
Yeah.
Because she does like motherhood. It's right. Obvious in the article.
Right.
And she could have written it differently.
Well, she could have,
and exited gracefully.
She could have said something more honest, like, you know, it's tough to have everything at the same time. There are trade-offs in life. She could have said, I've had this storied run, and now I want to focus on my family, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I'm going to put the same sort of effort into being a mom that I put into being the best tennis player in the world for so long, a female tennis player in the world for so long. But she had this other moment. It's just like to say, like, how culture seeps in if you're not really thinking about it. This is what I think is really illustrative for her. I don't dislike Serena Williams or whatever. I just think this is an interesting example. She had this other moment. This is a couple years back now, when it was the beginning of the whole men playing women's sports. And I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the exact quote. But she essentially said, if I played on the men's professional tennis tour, I wouldn't be in the top 50. I'm the best player in the world. I wouldn't be in the top 50. She said that. Now, like, then a year later, John McEnroe essentially said the same thing, and she got all offended. She got all upset. And it's like, she knows the truth and she knows what she actually believes, but she feels compelled to be part of the leftist chorus that dominates sport like every other institution. It's been a theme all show today, and frankly, a lot of shows. So you're trying to look at it from different angles. This is John Mackey from Whole Foods talking about the march of the left through all of our institutions, and that includes sports. And so I think she feels like, as this iconic figure, I have to fold in with where the prevailing opinion is, both within sports as well as the sports press corps, and they're self-reinforcing. And this is why she says things that seemingly are contradictory. If I was a man, I wouldn't have to do this. But I'm so excited to do it, right? That's sort of contradictory. If I was a man, if I tried to play in the men's tour, I wouldn't be in the top 50. John McEnroe says if Serena Williams played in the men's tour, she wouldn't be in the top 50. John McEnroe has no right to say that. Why? Why do you say that? Because you're folding in.
Well, even in her little, missive here, she says, look, I was 2 months pregnant when I won the U.S. Open. Okay. Great. Go ahead and try and win it at 8 months pregnant then. I mean, come on. You're someone who likes to break glass ceilings and prove that you're a physical phenom, which you don't need to prove anymore, oh, by the way. But, yeah, nobody's saying that you can't continue to play tennis and be pregnant. Go ahead.
Can you just do something because you want to do it and because you're good at it or because you want to explore it or some baseline human reason? Does everything have to be breaking some imaginary glass ceiling? Does everything have to be striking a blow against this imaginary patriarchy? I mean, you're not a suffragette, okay?
Yeah,
give it a rest.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't want that record to have additional Grand Slams. Apparently, obviously, I do. But day by day, I'm really not thinking about her, Margaret Court's record of 24 Grand Slam titles. If I'm in a Grand Slam final, then yes, I am thinking about that record. Maybe I thought about it too much, and that didn't help. The way I see it, I should have had 30 plus Grand Slams. I had my chances after coming back from giving birth. I went from C-section to a second pulmonary embolism to a Grand Slam final. I played while breastfeeding. I played through postpartum depression, but it didn't get me there. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. I mean, does anybody think of her that way? No.
Think of her which way?
As, as somebody who didn't get, 30 plus grand slams.
No. Well, I mean, this is all like, right.
So she's in her head.
I get you want to you strive for the record, just like, all the talk of of Tiger chasing Jack Nicklaus's record of the majors and so on and so forth. But I just, the whole thing, it's just, I don't know. It's just so put upon. I love every second of being pregnant with Olympia. I'm one of those annoying women who adore being pregnant. Well, so then embrace them. Why do you have to wring your hands about it? It sounds like she's, like Ted Williams going off to World War II and she lost a part of her career when she had her daughter Olympia. I mean, it's trade-offs in life. And you're happy with both, really, and you should be. You've got a beautiful daughter and you've got, all these records and standing, for the rest of time as one of the great tennis players. So what is the – no, but it could have been so much more if not for what? Here's my rule. Here's my idea in the interest of equity.
Okay.
I think if a male professional athlete's wife gets pregnant, then he has to retire. That's the end of his career. It's the only way to make it equitable.
Dan, you don't get an opinion on any of this because you don't have kids.
I know.
So your opinion matters not.
Those who can't,
not a bit.
Those who can't teach. I'm educating. So what about that? So that'd be equitable. So then you can't do that. If I was a man, I could be Tom Brady. Nope. When Brady had his kids with Giselle, the first kid with Giselle, he's done. He's gone.
This is another one of those situations with first world problems, right?
First world.
This is so sick.
Top 1/1,000,000th of a percent in the first world when you're talking about uber wealthy rich people and professional athletes, rich worldwide celebrities. Of course, I mean this is rarefied air. But what about that? I think that's very enlightened of me. I think I should get like a signed copy of The Handmaid's Tale for coming up with this. What do you think? Margaret Atwood, are you listening? No, male athletes must retire when their wives or multiple girlfriends get pregnant. The first one that does, because that's it. So that they don't have any advantage over female athletes in terms of longevity.
Is this another reason why Dan Proft is single?
I don't know. I would think this would endear me to the Serena Williams and the other man-hating shrews that she's speaking to here at Vogue. Taylor in Bartlett, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. You guys are right on the money. I love when you have all these females that go out there and they, I am woman, hear me roar. Why are there not more women in the trades? Why are there not more women construction workers and, carpenters, stuff like that? I mean, it's great money. It's great pay. And they could break all the glass ceilings all they want. So you guys have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call, Taylor. Yeah, well, selective glass ceilings. The glass ceilings that are to be broken are selective and mostly imaginary. We're speaking to a West Pointer, a female West Point grad.
Yeah, in one of the first classes to graduate. For me, it was an easy decision. Once I became a mom, in my opinion, women can do whatever they want. For me, I knew I wanted a big family. I knew the value of a big family, and I knew I wanted to raise my kids myself. So I made the decision. She's agonizing of a decision. She can make it one way or the other. It's a free country. Nobody is holding you back, Serena.
I don't
nobody.
Think so. That's the thing. I don't think she's agonizing about it. That's the funny thing. It doesn't feel to me from reading it like she's agonizing about it. I think she wants to do it. I think she's excited to do it. And I think she feels like she has to say something about.
Right? I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the whole
she's
thing.
She's got to explain herself to her cultural class.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Chris in Elmwood Park.
Hi, I don't think it's about that at all. I think she knows she's not going to win anymore. You saw the temper tantrum she had. When was that? When she lost to that other.
Well, I'm not opposed to temper tantrums. It's a high pressure environment. Yeah.
But I think, too, you remember Simone Biles at the Olympics? She knew she wasn't going to win, so she talked about with that.
Well, yeah, I don't. I defended Simone Biles. I remember that. I think she was unfairly criticized too. I'm a great champion of female athletes. Yeah.
I guess.
Me and Mike Scott. Right, two great champions of female athletes. Thanks for the call, Chris. No, I don't think so. I think, you know, Simone Biles actually, whatever. I mean, that's what she right. her opinion in terms of not feeling like she was in a place to compete. Okay, I mean, I respect that decision.
By the way,
she knows better than anybody.
Very
and the same thing with Serena.
Sport, not to be in the if it's well, your yeah. head's not in the game, you don't want to yeah. be flipping around the bars.
Yeah, and the same thing with Serena. Respect the decision. I'm sawing sawdust here, but I cannot help but take away from this that she feels compelled to make this statement. She feels compelled to make a statement that she doesn't actually believe. And isn't that just a commentary on our culture generally? Will Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, my daughter attended the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and they have a thing that they set up where you're deployed for like 2 years and stuff, and then you have a year of shore duty where you have a kid, and you know they're getting along with it. There was a little bit of she gained some weight from the pregnancy, and so she had a little problem getting back into the the qualifications and stuff. But you know they make. You just got to do what you can do, and you can't have everything, and you can't blame society when you can't have everything.
Well,
and,
okay, all right.
One more thing. Go Navy, beat Army. Bye-bye.
Yeah, right. No, 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 no.
Yeah, see.
Well, look, that was never my mindset. Because when I went to West Point, I understood what I was signing up for. And I understood that it was, you got to be full battle ready. And I, by the way, never was in combat, served in the Cold War. Was served in Germany, when we were still, it was West Germany, by the way, so it's still, the Russians are going to come across the fold a gap type of scenario. But I knew what I signed up for. And that's not to say that, at my convenience, the Navy's going to accommodate me or the Army's going to accommodate me about when I want to have kids and then I'm going to take all this recovery time. No, I actually don't buy into that. Seriously, I don't at all. And I did have one kid. I was in the military. I was right back at it after 6 weeks. I got my butt back in shape, and I did really well, physically, no problems. But look, your head has got to be in the game if you really want to be combat ready. And this idea that we're going to accommodate everybody's other's lifestyle for the military is wrong.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Dan and in for Amy J this morning is former state legislator, congressional candidate, gubernatorial candidate, Jeannie Ives, now at breakthrough-ideas.com. And before we get to the calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Give us a call on this open mic Friday with your concerns, comments, criticisms, compliments, general crack pottery. We'll take it all. I've got something to offer, Jeannie. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is rolling out a new specialty plate in the Sunshine State featuring the Gadsden flag.
Yep.
How about that? With the Don't Tread on Me iconography. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about that? Sends a clear message to out-of-state cars. Ron DeSantis said so many people are moving there. It's something crazy. The number is crazy. It's been like 300,000, like 300 people a day.
Wow.
Something like that.
It's huge.
It's a big number. And, of course, he's, I wouldn't say on cruise control, but for somebody who narrowly won 4 years ago, he's on pace for a rout in November for his reelection, which says something about the job that he's done. And, Floridians embrace said job.
Well, I'm just like not a fan of all these, multiple varieties of license plates. Yeah, I'm just in the state legislature. I always voted against them. I was like one of five. It was like, no, we have a license plate. That's it. And forget it. Go ahead. Put a bumper sticker on the back end. I really didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I was just voted against them. That was just my standard. There's like five of us who, and it was bipartisan, by the way. There are a few of us who are like, no, just one.
I like them.
Okay. I know you've got one, don't you?
No, not in Illinois.
Okay.
But I'm going to get a Choose Life license plate in Florida. Adoption service providers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I understand the purpose behind it, but this is actually one I could get behind.
Yeah. See, exactly. This turned you.
Yeah.
You just had to come up with the right specialty plate. Mm-hmm. In a related story, I understand through people I know in state government that Governor Pritzker is going to respond to Ron DeSantis, as he's spending most of his time doing right now. By introducing a new Illinois specialty plate featuring a hammer and sickle. So I can look forward to that.
I thought it was a Big Mac.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that could be another one coming down the pike. Also, this news from Alex Berenson, our friend Alex Berenson. Mm-hmm. He just posted at his Substack about this. You know, he's had this pending litigation against Twitter for being banned on Twitter. And they're in discovery. He survived a motion to dismiss. And he posted just a little bit ago, Biden administration officials asked Twitter to ban me because of my tweets questioning the COVID vaccines, even as the company employees believed I had followed Twitter's rules, according to internal Twitter communications that were unearthed during discovery. In a White House meeting in April of 21, 4 months before Twitter suspended my account, the company faced, quote, one really tough question about why Alex Berenson hasn't been kicked off the platform, unquote. This is a writing from a Twitter employee. The employee recounted the meeting discussion afterwards on the Twitter's internal Slack messaging system. The message and others make it clear that top federal officials targeted me specifically, potentially violating my basic First Amendment right to free speech. This is the conversation we've had about these social media platforms and big tech companies essentially serving as sentinels of the state. So, yes, a private actor is not bound by the First Amendment the way that the government is. It's a restraint on the First Amendment. But if you act as an agent of the state, then that complicates the matter significantly. And this suit that Berenson filed just got a lot more complicated for Twitter and the federal government, for that matter. Wow.
I hope he sues them all.
Wow. That's a big development.
Maybe Elon Musk will go back to like wanting to buy Twitter after they get demolished in a lawsuit.
Yeah, well, right.
Get him on the cheap.
Get him on the cheap, yeah. Let's see. Go to the phone lines. Amy Jacobson. Amy Jacobson calling in on this Open Mic Friday special caller. Amy, you're on Open Mic Friday in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I'm actually on I-65, and I was listening to you and Jeannie Hodge up until Indianapolis, so our signal stretches very far, so that's, I had you guys keeping me company.
That's good to know.
Appreciate it. Yeah, but I'm taking Peyton to college. He's going to Georgia Tech, right, Andrew or Peyton? Yeah. You excited?
Yep.
Do you guys have any questions for Peyton as he starts his new adventure?
Does your mom have her hands at 10-2, and is she looking forward at the road? We want to make sure you get to Atlanta.
No, not even close.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Did you hear the news about Alex Berenson, Amy?
Briefly, we're walking Bubba and Bunky while you're.
Oh,
talking,
you're walking so the dog. So it took for the dog. Yeah. That's okay.
Take the dog to college.
Off.
That's great.
Yeah. Does Peyton get to keep any of the dogs at school?
No. Oh. No, and about he's only said three words to me, and we're off. And then he and his little brother slept for 4 hours. So I finally woke them up. Yeah, well, he slept 2 hours last night, so now he's using this time in the car to take some naps.
So are you, when you get there, are you going to be going to a kegger and recounting your days at Iowa?
Yeah, right. I'm going to be that mom. I'm going to go through a fraternity rush with him and make sure he chooses the right house.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I know. I'm not going to do that.
Wait. You were in a sorority, weren't you?
Yeah, the Kappa Kappa Gamma.
So do you stop at the Kappa Kappa Gamma house at Georgia Tech and, like, provide mentorship to the young ladies there?
Any college campus I go to, I visit every Kappa house and just see what it's like and see if the girls are around and talk. Yeah, I just check it out, you know?
Maybe introduce your son to, your eligible son to, you know, some Kappas at Georgia Tech. What do you think?
That would be fun.
I'm sure that wouldn't be embarrassing for him at all. Yeah.
Here's one thing we know. You're going to see a lot of other Illinoisans there, and at any variety of SEC schools. That's a definite.
That's an ACC school, technically.
Oh, I know that one is. Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah. But you're going to find them elsewhere. I mean, you'll probably see a lot of Illinoisans. So my daughter's headed to Ole Miss, and so maybe I can connect you. She's going to go through sorority rush if she needs a – look, I actually think that I went to the largest fraternity in the world because I went to West Point, so whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I have no sorority connections. So if my daughter needs a sorority connection, Amy, maybe I'll be calling you.
Oh, Jeannie, we are all – I have Kappa Kappa Grandma. My grandma was a Kappa. My sister, I will definitely help you out.
This is all new to me. I just wore gray all day.
Sounds good. Yeah.
And you served our country. But I have to say one thing. I-65, I do not understand why people drive on the left and pass on the right. It has been mind-boggling this entire time. Is there some state law that says that? Because all the truckers are in the left lane and people are passing on the right. So I don't get it.
I don't know. Can't help you there.
Can't help me out.
When you get to Atlanta, if you see Kenny Anderson or Dennis Scott roaming around, tell them I said hey. All right.
Okay.
All right, Amy. Well, safe and Peyton. Safe travels. Enjoy Georgia Tech.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And thanks to all our listeners who are so sweet. Thanks to Holly from St. Louis. I could not have done this without you because she helped me get his stuff together. You did the work, Andrew, but she provided a lot of guidance on, you know, writing your. You have to write a composition, you know what you have to do to apply for schools these days. So it's not like it used to be, Dan, when you and I went to college.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call, Amy. Yeah, it's not like
the same.
Okay. One was an open enrollment school and the other. Yeah, but that's not important. Grant in Rockford, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, you two. Jeannie, always good to hear your perspective. The Alex Berenson thing, that's huge. I can't wait to see that unfold. But I just wanted to say I love you guys' show. And since Rush died, I can't stand those two jabronis that are on in his slot. Just can't stand it. You guys keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call.
The ammunition. Let's go, Brandon.
Thanks for the call, Grant, and good use of the word jabroni. I always appreciate that. We'd have also accepted Mook. Michelle in Woodridge.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Jeannie. I wanted to just make your listeners aware and maybe ask you for some help with something. This Tuesday, August 16th at Naperville City Council, they are voting on the ban of the sale of AR-15s, which would put two businesses pretty much out of business. One was Law Weapons, which is a family-owned business for 20 years, and Range USA, and it would do absolutely nothing to prevent mass shootings. So I belong to a group called A Girl and a Gun, and I do classroom through Law Weapons, and they're great teaching women self-defense and situational awareness and safely handling weapons. And it's such theater to try to ban the sale of these guns. So Jeannie, I don't know if you have any pull or you want to be out there to draw some attention to this. And I don't know if you have any contact with Darren Bailey, but we could certainly use a big voice like that to come and support us. I know there's going to be a lot of people out there, but there's also going to be even more. I don't know if it's more, but there's going to be a lot of opposition. I think Moms Against Guns or something. There's a lot of groups. I was at that last city council meeting and heard, you know, all the speakers, but we could really use the help because it would put a really great guy out of business, especially the guy at Law Weapons. You know, Range USA, I know there's lots of them, but it would put people out of work and really take away a lot of resources that women especially and a lot of people have to understand and learn how to handle weapons safely.
Well, I have no confidence in that Naperville City Council, none whatsoever. I mean, so now all the gun sales will just be pushed to, what, Aurora, Lyle? Yeah. Your surrounding communities. It's so stupid. It's just dumb of them.
And the
business owners have the biggest voice in this, and they've got to individually talk to every single one of those council members. And, you know, I'll tell you what, if my West Point classmate, Benny, votes to ban, quote-unquote, assault weapons in his city, I mean, it's just going to be another disappointment.
Well, who is it? What's his name?
I'm blanking on his last name.
He's Naperville City Council.
Yeah, Naperville City Council. He's a West Point football player, class of 87, just like me.
Yeah, now he's a P-hat?
Yeah, he absolutely is.
There were three council people that brought this to the floor. There was three of them, and I don't know who they were.
But just a point of order here, that ordinance is a violation of state law. So it should be challenged. I mean, if they pass it, which they probably will because Naperville has lost its way, then it should just be challenged in court because they have a municipality has no standing to pass an ordinance like that. It is the province of the state, period, black letter law, state statute.
Yes. And they are fighting it. They have everything ready to go if they do pass this. They're definitely planning on fighting this.
Good.
For sure.
Good. Thanks for the call,
Michelle.
It's
Benny White, by the way. It's Benny White.
Benny White.
Benny White.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Great. Thanks for the call.
He should know better.
So many people should know better, but they don't. It's confounding. Bob in Rogers Park.
Yes. During the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings, I contacted Dick Durbin. And I told him not to vote not in favor of confirming her. 4 months later, I got a response from him. And rather than read the response, I'll just read you the email that I sent in response to his response to mine. To me, your email response to my email was sent on August 5th, 4 months after KGB's confirmation. You seem to be in your rapid response mode. In your response to me, you are highly focused on KBJ's race and sex. I understand your commitment to an affirmative action appointment since in your first comment and closing comment, you mentioned that she was black. You also mentioned that she is a woman. I'm not sure how you know this since during the confirmation hearings, KBJ herself was unable to define what a woman is. It is rather presumptuous of you to declare that she is a woman when, like KBJ, you are not a biologist. With your tardy response to my email to you, you have reconfirmed that KBJ has been appointed based on immutable characteristics and your own poor judgment and lack of qualifications to serve as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I will convey your failed performance in this and other matters to as many voters as I can prior to Election Day. I hope you are proud of yourself.
Thanks for the call, Bob, except Durbin's not up this time. You'll have to use Duckworth as a proxy. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Eduardo, Midway.
Yeah, good morning. So there was a Monterey off-duty cop shot by a 20-year-old a couple of days ago, and then you had the smash and grab in Vernon Hills. So the community needs to put out more pressure on these state's attorneys, and there also needs to be, like, more community watches, too, like kind of backing up the police.
Especially if your state's attorney is Al Reinhardt in Lake County. one of the two of the 102 state's attorneys to fold in with the other one, Kim Fox, and support the defunding and the defenestration of police and prosecutors, the so-called Safety Act.
Yep.
Two. Reinhardt in Lake County. Thanks for the call. Reinhardt in Lake County and Kim Fox. But that's what these suburbs are now. Lake County, well, Naperville, DuPage County. Okay. We'll see.
Well, I mean, that's the other resolution coming up for Naperville. Will they support or not support the Safety Act, which is not safe? So we'll see what they decide there.
The suburbs.
Meanwhile, every state's attorneys like Glasgow, Berlin, they know what's coming. This is a disaster.
So the majority of these suburban communities, even the most of the well-to-do ones, not all, but most of the upper middle or middle upper and upper income suburbs like Naperville, they are middle income families. They're otherwise sensible people. they got to pay attention. They got to get engaged, and they got to, you know, to borrow a phrase, throw off the chains of their champagne socialist overlords and express their common sense through their choices on November 8th. The city council members beholden to these Mercedes Marxists in Naperville and elsewhere, forget it. Middle-income people that don't have a voice, that don't have representation, that don't make waves, they got to make waves, at least at the ballot box. That's the play, if there's a play to be made. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Well, sounds like some of these people need to find a new state to live in. I don't know if you know me, Dan and Jeannie. My name is Marcus Hamilton. I was a former Texas Ranger. And you might have heard about my story the last week or so before I was retiring. They bought a bank robberies down there in Texas. And it was hell or high water to catch those bank robbers. It was. One of them killed my good friend Alberto. I don't know if you remember that. It was in the news. And I got that rat bastard. One of them, at least, I got him. And then I retired. I'm up here in Illinois, Wisconsin, driving around. And you know, I just thought I'd call in and say, get to Texas or something.
Is that your Jeff Bridges? Is that a Jeff Bridges?
Yes, that's my Jeff Bridges. And
from Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of there.
Almost the same from The Old Man.
Yeah, it's a little, I mean, just a constructive criticism, because, of course, I appreciate your work. But it's a little too gravelly.
Little too gravelly.
You mean just, you know, dial it down a tad.
Right? I got to breathe a little more, too. He does a lot of heavy breathing. He did a lot of that, too. So I did have some of that in my work that I was working on. I guess I just didn't get it. What did you think of The Old Man at the end? I didn't think it was that good.
Well, I was waiting for an eighth episode to season one, and then there is no eighth episode. So, no, I was disappointed. But I hope there's a season two.
I know you got other callers, but Better Call Saul, I just want to talk about that, too. That was Better Call Saul. That's such a great show. It really kind of shows you, and I think, Jeannie, you can add to this, how you really have to raise your kids well. If you look at the main characters, Kim Wexler and Saul, of course, they both had terrible situations with their parenting. Kim Wexler's mom in the show was a reprobate. And, of course, the parents of Saul Goodman, or Jimmy, whatever his name is, they didn't treat their kids equally. And look what happened to Chuck. Look what happened to Jimmy.
Thanks.
So
thanks.
It's really a lesson in parenting.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
Frank's a racist. You can't say that parents matter.
I love a Bob Odenkirk. I love Bob. It was a local. Naperville, Berwyn, yeah. Well, great actor and writer.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.